Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Meryl Barr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yes, you are. Normally you hear Meryl, of course, during the Idiot Boxers, which is, of course, our TV podcast. That is also plays on the Fat Guys Network. But today we're having Meryl come in and join us for the Fat Guys at the Movies because he's a little chubby, too.
You know, well, let's be honest. It's because I'm the only one who's dumb enough to wake up this early in the morning.
But it's not that early. It's just we're at an odd week. We're at a very odd week because it's 4th of July week, and we're dropping the show a little bit early. You got Spider-Man that opened on Tuesday, and we've got Savages, which opened later, and the Katy Perry movie that I completely forgot about when I was making the show notes, which we're not even going to talk about.
That movie with the woman with the magical boobs.
Yes. That's opening on Thursday. So I got Meryl to do this because he has nothing better to do. And he's good that way. He's a good, loyal host. Anyways, before we move on and I kiss his butt anymore, because we don't want that happening, let's talk about the paperwork here. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and get all of our podcasts, and including tons of stuff Meryl's doing with the Idiot Boxers and updates on television. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies or the Fat Guys Network, and we will pop right up, as will all of our shows. So go and subscribe, write us a review, all that good stuff. We will love you forever. Go to facebook.com/FGATM and like our page. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail, 740-205-6456. Right now, the only thing we've gotten have been telemarketers.
Of course.
You guys don't want to
hear
those.
Are you surprised telemarketers still exist?
It blows my mind that they do, because I would have expected a lot of their, you know, just the ability to call with all the do not call lists. And so many people moving away from landlines, and I get cell phone calls all the time, but I don't answer a number if I don't recognize it, you know. So you can get me on Twitter, twitter.com/KevinCarr. A little bit real quick, Meryl, tell us who you are and what you do. I mean, obviously people.
Well, you can find everything. You can find a lot of my stuff, Fat Guys at the Movies, Operation Nikita, and the Idiot Boxers, and
just to be aware, everybody, Operation Nikita is just a podcast. He's not actually doing anything remotely related to spies.
That'd be awesome if it was. You can find me on twitter.com/Simon43 and facebook.com/MerylJBarr, which is a fan page. Yes, I know. Kevin loves that.
J and, stands for Juice. Meryl Juice Bar.
And that's it.
Wow. Oh, okay. So anyways.
This is a lot. It's a lot more rigid format, so I'm trying to speed it up.
Yeah, no, you're doing a great job. You're doing awesome. I appreciate it completely. Let's jump into the movies, because I think we have a lot to say about both films. We're literally, I'm not kidding, we are literally skipping the Katy Perry movie, because I completely forgot it existed. They didn't screen it for us, and I was I was totally okay with that. But I forgot it existed, and then as I was making the show notes, I'm like, oh, that opens this week. I'm not going to see it.
Surprised they didn't screen it, considering you had the Justin Bieber movie screen and do well. And then you had, what was it? What was the other one? The Glee?
Well,
did they screen Glee?
They didn't screen any of them here. I mean, they have had screenings, but they didn't screen any of those concert movies. You know, Hannah Montana, Jonas Brothers, Justin Bieber, Glee. This one, what's odd is they actually had Stubbs, AMC Stubbs, which is a... that's the rewards program you have with the AMC theaters. And AMC is huge in Columbus. They've got a lot of theaters. So you could go buy advance tickets to it, like, on Monday. But I wasn't going to do that. Plus, we had our power out. That's the other thing. In Columbus, we had a huge storm come through. So it knocked out our power. Our power is out for 2 days. There are still some people without power. And as I understand it, the theater where they were going to have these Katy Perry screenings, the power knocked out. So God intervened and said, we're not watching. Not only did the publicity reps not provide us actual free screenings, God intervened and wouldn't allow us. And what are you going to do? You can't get a refund on that.
God was like, we are not watching the magical breast lady, people. There are better things to do.
Well, but see, I don't even want to see. I appreciate Katy Perry's chestular region, but the problem is, it's aimed at kids. That's the thing. If you watch her, she went from being kind of this edgy, sort of sexy star to now kind of turning into an anime character that sings, because she aims at like small girls. If you look at the picture, it's her singing the poster. We're talking way too much about it, but the standee in the theaters is her singing, and it's her bedroom. Her bedroom doesn't look like that. Her bedroom in this thing looks like a 13-year-old girl's bedroom with My Pretty Pony and lots of rainbows and stuff like that. So they're aiming for a much younger audience, like Firework. Her songs are all aimed at more kind of like grade school inspirational stuff now, which is fine. And it does well for her. I don't care to see this. Mm-hmm. So anyways, let's move on. We're going to talk about Savages, in which Oliver Stone directs box office failure Taylor Kitsch in a film about drug dealers kidnapping a couple guys' girlfriend.
Every successful business has an origin. Ben went to Berkeley and double majored in business and botany.
This is the best cannabis in the world.
I think we just struck gold.
He takes 99% of the violence out of the business. The other 1%? Well, that's where Tron comes in.
You guys, you have a clean business.
But now when cartels are moving north, they want a Ben and Tron section in aisle 3.
I found their weakness.
First of all, I love that he's box office failure Taylor Kitsch.
Oh, this was to be the year of Taylor Kitsch. It turns into the year of Channing Tatum. Taylor Kitsch, he had John Carter, which I like John Carter, but I do think he was a huge burden on that movie. And then Battleship, it's not his fault.
It's not his fault.
It didn't help that he was in the movie, but I mean, when you're out underacted by Rihanna. You know, when you got Rihanna, like the focus of the terrible acting goes on her. But now this movie, I don't think this movie's going to do well. But first, I want to know what you
think. It's up against Spider-Man. Of course it's not going to do well.
It's up against the Katy Perry movie. I wanted to see Tyler Perry direct the Katy Perry movie. Then it could be Tyler Perry's Katy Perry part of Madea. And she could do it in a fat suit.
I know you've seen Savages, so that's one. Again, I haven't. So Savages. Here's the one thing I'm going to say is I watched the trailers for this movie, and am I the only one here who gets a Domino vibe? Like every time I see it, and like, is this a Domino sequel?
Because no, you know what's funny is Rudy Obias, a good friend of the show, at the screening he went to, he tweeted out, he goes, Oliver Stone finally made a Tony Scott movie.
Yes, it's like. And I don't. Everyone's like saying, "Oh, it's the return of Oliver Stone." The movies like Scarface. No. I don't want that.
There's drugs in it. That's the big connection with Scarface. But you do kind of feel like they're going to like advertise it as saying, from the guy who wrote Scarface comes a movie that's not nearly as good. No, you're right. It is. But see, I know you're a huge fan of Tony Scott. You are. Mm-hmm. You're a ridiculous fan of Tony Scott. But it's Tony Scott. I have my problems with Tony Scott stuff, but he makes a competent movie. His movies aren't pretentious. Well, Domino was.
Domino is not good. Domino is Tony Scott's Pearl Harbor. Like, I can't defend it. I there's just no way to.
Yeah, but I mean, even stuff like taking a Pelham 1-2-3, which I have some big problems with. It's still. It's a lark. He's like, oh, I'm making a popcorn. He's the guy who makes popcorn movies. Domino was trying to be too pretentious. Mm-hmm. Before we got 10 seconds left. I'll just let you know, they actually say the word savages like 5 times in the movie, which made me so happy. But when we come back, I'll finish the review. And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We were in the middle of talking about Savages, which I was sitting next to Nick Harum for this movie. Nick's been on the show a couple times. Movies Hate You Too on Twitter and the web. And every time they said Savages, we just kind of looked at each other and made this like silent squeal.
I look forward to the Savages drinking game, Mr. Carr.
Oh, it's I hear. Is there anything else you wanted to say in your initial impressions of what you fear Savages to be, knowing it's 100?
Look, I did no, pretty much. I first of all, apparently a lot of people like this movie, which I mean, I watched the trailers, and this is the kind of thing. This is a movie that everyone I think expects me to want to see like right now, but it just I watched the trailers and I'm so uninterested by anything going on. It looks too psychotic, and it doesn't look like there's a focus based on the trailers. And it sounds like I'm right.
you're kind of right. Did you like Blow?
And that's Ciblo.
The Ted Demi. It reminds me a little bit of Blow, but it's like, here's the thing. First of all, it's 130 minutes. There's no reason for that to happen.
No.
Second of all, apparently it's based on a novel. I've not read the novel. I can't speak on terms of the novel. But half the movie's narrated by the lead character, the woman, which is played by Blake Lively.
Yeah.
And it falls in, and I'm sure it worked in the book. There's a lot of stuff that works in a book because it's probably told first person and that kind of thing. But when you, first of all, then you churn it through the modern Oliver Stone writing of a script, you put it into his filmmaking style, and you cast Blake Lively and Taylor Kitsch in it.
Mm.
Something really gets lost in the translation. Blake Lively is a terrible, terrible actress. I mean, just plain bad.
Mm-hmm.
She worked in Gossip Girl to a degree because she was kind of this prissy, snooty socialite.
I liked her in The Town, I'll say that.
She was a bit part in it. I mean, she like showed up and she just had to look trashy. I mean, she didn't do a whole lot of acting in The Town.
Right.
Most of that was done by Ben Affleck. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I do.
You know, I mean, it's like, because like Green Lantern, she was woefully out of place as this brilliant pilot.
Yeah.
I mean, she's pretty. Don't get me wrong. But she's narrating this thing. And the narration is very much, it's sort of like a really, just like trying to be poetic, a pretentious version of Twilight, where she's just like, be like, oh, he went over to the house, you know, this, and like, well, sort of like just narrating very basic things.
Well, I remember I was watching the trailer, and the first line in the trailer is, just because I'm telling you this story doesn't mean I'm alive at the end of it. And I'm like,
yeah.
Blank you, okay?
Yeah.
Blank yeah. you. Seriously.
It is one of those things that it gets worse. I mean, before the credits are done, she's narrating everything, and she is a terrible actress, thus a terrible voiceover artist. And what's funny, she's like having sex with people, the two of them throughout. Never, I mean, and this is me getting in. It's so clear. It's like he wanted, obviously Oliver Stone wanted Blake Lively, and he put her in this movie, but she won't take her top off. So she's having tons of sex with her shirt on. Then like later on, there's a no-name actress having sex with fully clothed. And I'm like, this is like Rock of Ages.
Isn't this movie rated R?
Yeah, but you got actresses who are like, oh, I can't do that. It's not. You know, and I'm like, then don't do a drug dealer movie about a slutty girl who lives with two guys and has sex with them all the time. So the movie itself is horribly pretentious, just like Oliver Stone. Kind of like if you've seen Oliver Stone's Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that. It's that heavy pretentious. It's trying to do maybe U-Turn. Like, U-Turn wasn't that... I mean, U-Turn was pretentious. But it was like a lower grade attempt by him after doing stuff like JFK. But this one... So it doesn't go into that JFK, Nixon, we think we're changing the world type thing. But you really think he's making art, and he's not. He's got Taylor Kitsch, who's a terrible actor. And he's not good in this movie either. You know what the best part of this film is?
What?
John Travolta.
Oh.
Blew my mind. What's so funny is everybody's terrible in this movie. The plot makes no sense. The story being, there's these two guys who create this super strain of marijuana, and they're so famous, and this cartel from Mexico is wanting to kind of bring them into their business.
Okay. First of all, cartels don't do weed. Like, they do weed, but they're not where they were.
Well, it's like,
back then.
It's like
weed.
10 times more powerful than regular. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's kind of his love letter to weed. But the whole, you're right. I mean, this is the kind of stuff you kill people over cocaine. You don't cross international lines and behead people over pot. You get shot with a shotgun in a trailer for pot. You know, pot is sort of like the crystal meth level of drug running, where you'll get in trouble. You can get killed over doing, but not but from a cartel from Mexico. I mean, you're right. Like, it kind of makes no sense. So that's the whole thing. And then they end up, they're trying to, they don't want to join him because they don't want to be with the bloody cartel. And then they kidnap their girlfriend. They're both of them have the same girl. They all kind of live as a threesome. and they kidnap her to force them their hand. It makes no sense. It's a ridiculous premise to begin with. Seriously, The Amazing Spider-Man has a more sustainable premise in logic and science than this movie does. And they're the most obvious drug dealers. They're driving around in sports cars. She's like, oh, because they're going to leave town. Because they're like, oh, we're gonna hop on a flight and escape. She's like, I need to go to the mall and go shopping. And I'm like, really? Seriously? You're that dumb that you need to go to the mall. And they're shallow, awful, horrible people. And they're stupid. And they make the dumbest mistakes ever. It's really a bad movie. I was laughable. There are parts of it. There's a scene at the end. You will want to punch the movie in the face.
Oh, lovely.
When the ending comes. I want you to see it just so you
Well, can if I see it, so I'm going to be till the end of the year when I do a year catch-up. Like, I'm not seeing this in the theater. Just no way. There's just no way.
I mean, I understand there's some people who love it because they're like hot for Taylor Kitsch and they think it's this sort of this really cool, sort of edgy, but it's not. And it's laughable. It's Oliver Stone takes himself way too seriously. He does not understand how to...
The director of Platoon and Wall Street takes himself too seriously? Well, no, I don't believe it.
But even, I mean, you look at... I mean, his earlier stuff, like his like pre-1991, 92 stuff, like JFK and before. Even JFK, as horribly pretentious as it was a beautifully made film.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, like Platoon's a good movie and Wall Street's a good movie. This isn't even Wall Street 2, which was like, this is just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they say savages 5 times.
Wonderful.
There's the part where she voices over. She's like, I looked up savages in the dictionary. And I'm like, really? You don't know what savages means. It's like, be one thing to sit there if she's like, oh, I looked up anti-disestablishmentarianism in the dictionary. I'm like, okay, that's not common knowledge. Savages... pretty much. Oh, the other thing, like at one scene, like this is not a spoiler because it's early on. Taylor Kitsch is watching this video on somebody had sent him as a threat, and it's this guy who had beheaded like 7 guys, and he used to be in the military, and what's her name comes up behind him. She's like, well, is that Afghanistan? He's like, no, it's Mexico. And it was supposed to be like, oh, this stuff's so close to us. And I'm like, really, seriously? And I thought that Mexico was completely, you know, always obeying the law, and nobody gets killed over drugs in Mexico. I mean, it really is. It's him trying to do Scarface again and directing it, but it's big. And you could tell he insisted on having Taylor Kitsch and Blake Lively in this movie. And then, but like John Travolta, he's awesome in this film, which I thought he'd be a joke because going to the Tony Scott angle, he was really ridiculous in Taking to Pelham 1-2-3.
I enjoyed that. I enjoyed his
performance. But he was very cheeky when he was very every time in the theater when I saw Pelham 1-2-3, every time he drops an F-bomb, the audience just burst out laughing. Because he seems sort of cheesy with it, and here he is kind of cheesy, but he's sort of like Vincent Vega's strung out brother.
Mm.
So it works in this one, and there's one scene in there where he's kind of having a face to face with Benicio del Toro.
Right.
And suddenly the movie's interesting for like 5 minutes during the scene because they're both good actors. And then we go back to Blake Lively. So, anyways, this one sucks.
Yeah.
The next one is The Amazing Spider-Man. Mark Webb's reboots the Spider-Man franchise with another origin story in the web-slinger fighting the Lizard.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Parker.
Not much to tell, really.
Peter lives with his aunt and uncle.
Did you catch that spider guy yet?
No, but we will. This guy wears a mask like an outlaw.
I think he's trying to do something maybe the police can't.
Can't?
You know, if you're gonna steal cars, don't dress like a car thief.
You a cop?
You seriously think I'm a cop in a skin tie, red and blue suit?
Who are you? There's a rumor of a new species in New York. It can be aggressive if threatened.
All right, you got about 15 seconds.
I'll quickly say that for me, it rocks, and then I'll explain that further in the next segment.
Rocks. Okay. When we get back to the middle segment, we will talk about The Amazing Spider-Man, and if you're listening on the radio, you're going to want to head to the internet.
22 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We're now in the infamous middle segment.
Yay!
All right. So can I?
You start. You go. You made a point to go see it, and I think that's good because it's nice to actually have somebody to talk about.
So The Amazing Spider-Man. I want to start. I understand how people are gonna not be able to not compare this to Sam Raimi's 2002 film.
I think it's pretty much impossible to not compare.
Right, and but I will say this: we recently, by recently I mean just this past weekend, live tweeted Spider-Man, so I got to see it again right before seeing this movie, and I gotta say, this movie gets a lot right what that movie fucks up because it screwed up because that was before like
you can say fuck it's the middle segment you know
no that's all I'm correcting, but people in the 2002 one like. That Spider-Man movie, like, they don't really care that much about the side characters, and they really jump to the high-profile stuff. Mary Jane's in it, and Green Goblin's the villain. We now live in an age of comic book movies where you want to do more of the side character stuff. So, like, they really made a point to redo Flash the right way, which is the bully in the high school.
Yeah.
So they fix that up. They go with the Gwen Stacy storyline, which is a big deal in the Spider-Man universe. I don't know if you know those toys, because I know you weren't
aware. Yeah, I don't read Spider-Man, so...
So I won't tell you what happens with that whole story. But, so they go with that storyline set, which to me makes more sense, and they make the villain the Lizard not go right out of the gate with someone like the Green Goblin. Yeah. And so, I love that they fix those things. Now, they make a couple mistakes along the way. Now, I know the question is, do they need to do a reboot? I feel like they didn't need to do it, but I didn't dread it when I was watching it. I was like, okay, they're going cool places with this. I'm okay with this. And they didn't do the same exact origin story that they did with the 2002 movie.
Pretty much did. they totally did the same origin story.
Yeah, but the beats don't. Well, I mean, they hit the same beats, but they don't happen the same way.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not a reshoot, but it's. This was my problem, and I've been raging about origin stories for years, and I just wrote a piece on Film School Rejects about whether you needed origin stories, not whether you need to reboot. Because here's the thing. I think the biggest stumbling block I had for The Amazing Spider-Man is the first entire hour was same shit, different day.
Mm-hmm.
It was different. I mean, he's in high school through this, whereas he gets out of high school in the original movie. It's Gwen Stacy. It's not MJ. You know what happened? It's not at a wrestling match. That things happen with Uncle Ben. It's elsewhere. But like you said, all the beats are there. I don't mind them saying we're doing it. This is not consistent with the Sam Raimi movie. We're not just continuing the Sam Raimi movies. I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem wasting an hour watching the same damn thing over again. Start in the middle. Take, for example, even though I'm not a huge fan of this movie, if you look at the Tim Burton Batman from 1989, they did the origin story in that, like, in 5 minutes in the middle of the movie. They kicked it off now it's the beginning of Batman in Gotham, but they don't go through him growing up, and his parents getting murdered, and then him going and learning these things, and which they didn't go through the what they do in Batman Begins. Same thing as opposed to like Superman from 1978, where you got 10 minutes on Krypton. He's trying to convince the scientists. They fly him out into space, and he crashes, and he discovers his powers. He goes to the Fortress of Solitude, and an hour later, he's finally in the damn Superman outfit.
Right.
What I don't like about origin stories is first of all, all superhero origin stories are pretty much the same. So if you've seen one, you've seen them all. Let them just start off in the middle and have Spider-Man. And then if you feel the need to explain, to point out that this is different, you know, have a flashback, have a bit, or like what they do in The Incredible Hulk, where they basically tell it in the credits of the movie. That's the stuff that I like. I don't mind doing a different version of Spider-Man, but I don't want to have to sit through the same movie for the first hour.
Yeah, well, the beautiful thing of Spider-Man is they could have just been like, opening shot, he's swinging through the city, voiceover narration, I've been doing this for a year, what do you think?
Exactly. The reason I don't think they did is because the meat of the story is in that interaction between him and Uncle Ben, and it's the meat of the story is with him and Gwen Stacy, even though I thought I like Gwen Stacy as a heroine way better than MJ, but
well, yeah, much better actress too.
Better actress, and the character's better. I mean, because MJ's a shallow, completely. What about me? Oh my God, I just moved to New York, and I've been here for like 6 weeks, and I'm not a famous actress, and I'm waiting tables. Oh, my life is over. I mean, that's MJ. And then she's like, oh, I love you, Peter Parker. Oh, you don't love me? Oh, this guy over here sweeping the street. I love him now. You know, that's MJ. I hate MJ. So I think Gwen Stacy's a better character. But if you look at like sort of like the summer tent pole part of the movie, him fighting the lizard, it's a shitty story. I mean, it's very trite and silly. And again, it also kind of reduxes Spider-Man 2 the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man, because it's a guy who works at Oscorp, who has this thing, and he's going to have his funding pulled, so he experiments on himself, and he turns into an evil monster, which is basically right. What happened to Norman Osborn in the first movie.
Right, well, I think that here's the thing, like, that's the lore. Like, yeah. Oscorp is always at the center of everything in the Spider-Man universe.
No, I get it.
So I mean, there's only so much you can work around that. What I like is that.
But like the Doc Ock origin, at least wasn't him injecting himself with green fluid, and suddenly he becomes evil.
Right. No, I hear that. I hear that. But like, and I understand this is blasphemy, but I think I actually did like this movie more than I liked Spider-Man 1.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's because when I saw Spider-Man 1, I was 13, so I didn't really understand how a lot was going on. I just saw a cool. Doing the suit.
Did you love Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man, when you were 13?
You know what? I gotta say, I didn't.
Really?
Right? When I remember walking, and I only know this because I remember my dad was a little pissed at me for saying it. I walked out saying, I didn't like it. Because I remember,
you should love every movie I take you to.
No, he was just like annoyed because like, what, I said that. Well, here's the thing, I grew up on the, like, what got me was like, but he doesn't have web shooters. Because I remember I grew up on the 90s cartoon, which I now learned is very faithful to the comics, almost like page for page. And so when anything that basically deviated from that, I thought was bad. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I've since learned those don't go hand in hand.
Yeah.
But I will say that I think this movie takes a better approach to it. I think this movie there are things about this movie, about this new one with Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
I think he plays the character a little better. I think he plays the character more socially awkward. Now, he is a little more brooding than he should have been. Yeah. I'll be honest. But I think that compared to the way Tobey Maguire played it, I like this one better. He's more of the scientist, the genius who sort of just doesn't...
Yeah.
He doesn't have much of a place until he meets Doc Connors for the first time. And this movie kind of does the Doc Connors storyline that Sam Raimi's... In the first movie, there's one line about Doc Connors. And then they completely...
He shows up in all three of Sam Raimi's movies. He just walks through the movie.
Right, well, no, he doesn't even walk through. In the first one, he
sees him on campus.
Does he in the first one?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. So. But I remember Tobey Maguire goes, Doc Connors fired me. And then the second one he shows up, that's where they talk on campus. Then the third one, he's actually working for him. Yeah. But it's like, well, then how does the line in the first movie make any sense then? Because I only know that because, again, we watched it very recently. But yeah. I liked, for example, there's a scene in the 2002 one where it's like they're on the bridge and then everyone in New York City apparently piles onto this bridge. It's like throwing stuff at Green Goblin. I like that. There's a version of that scene, kind of, in this movie where a bunch of New Yorkers team up to help Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I like this version better than I do in the 2002 one.
Yeah. Well, I think the 2002 one, I'm not sure if that happened. That may have been reshoots in response to 9/11. I'd heard that. I don't know for sure. Because that was very, don't fuck with us New Yorkers kind of line.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't bother me. It plays a little awkward now, out of context. I think 2002 Spider-Man plays a little awkward because we've had 10 years of superhero movies. Mm-hmm. Whereas, also, I think what Raimi was trying to do is he was going for classic, like, 1960s Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And he nailed it. He totally did. And it's goofy and cheesy and not the best dialogue. This one is more modern Spider-Man with modern... You know, he's like you said, he's still socially awkward. He's a little bit wisecracking. I think Andrew Garfield fits physicality wise way better. I think he looks great as the Spider-Man in the suit. So, I mean, there's a lot of respect I can give But Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, that I didn't really like the series until it got to the second movie. And I just watched, literally last night, I watched Spider-Man 3. And I still like Spider-Man 3. Yeah, there's some goofy shit that happens in it. But going back and watching Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2, there's a lot of goofy shit in those movies, too. Mm. That I think people forgot about. And then, because you got to remember, Spider-Man 2 came out in 2004. So we were still very early in that stage, you know. And
we're pre-Batman Begins, which kind of changed everything.
Yeah, and then Batman I wouldn't be surprised if Batman Begins had a bigger impact on just the public's attitude to Spider-Man 3. Because Spider-Man 3 fits very much in tone and spirit along the lines of the other two movies. It messes with the Venom character. So you got people who are like, oh, mythology, this and that. You're always going to have that. But as a movie, it's no less goofy, I don't think, mm-hmm. than the other two. But in terms of, like, I got to issue the web shooters, even as a child, like when I was 10, and occasionally I'd swerve into a Spider-Man comic, I always thought the web shooters were bullshit. I'm like, he's got spider sense. He's super strong. He can jump. He can climb walls. But it's ridiculous that he can spin a web. You know? And I get it. That was his kryptonite. He'd always run out of web fluid right at the time when he needed. And I'm like, I understand why that was put in by Stan Lee, but it was a cheap plot device that he created back in the 60s, and it's been preserved. So when they had the organic shooters, I was like, that makes sense. Should it be coming out of his ass? Probably. But that's okay. Again, he's a human being who can climb walls.
What I like about this one is it's a Spider-Man that he's a Peter Parker, not Spider-Man. He's a Peter Parker that makes mistakes.
Yeah.
And as Spider-Man, way too many people find out who he is.
Yeah. And there's no secret identities in movies anymore. I mean, it's like James Bond. He's the lousiest spy. He carries a card that says Secret Agent James Bond and walks around. Everyone knows what drink he has. Oh, I got your martini. Shake and touch. What's your name? Bond. James Bond. Really? You're not going with an alias, are you? No. Okay.
So it's like everybody in this movie, everyone who matters finds out. Well, almost everyone. There's one person who doesn't figure it out, which is stupid. Mm. But everyone figures it out, for the most part, that he's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then they sort of... they course correct that at the end of the movie, kind of. Again, I can't.
It's not too much. I don't want to spoil.
Yeah. So, but they do a course correction, kind of, to sort of subvert that. But I like this. Like, it's clearly a Spider-Man. He's in his first maybe month of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Trying to understand it, and I also like how it's not like in the first movie. I mean, it's classic comic bookiness. A supervillain happens to pop up right when the hero comes in.
Yeah.
Like in the first one, he's like, he gets his powers unrelated to Norman Osborn. At that same moment, Norman Osborn just happens to decide to become the Green Goblin.
They do take a lot longer to get to the Lizard. That's true.
Right. They do. But in this movie, it's like the Lizard comes up as a direct result of Peter becoming Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So it makes more sense to me.
No. That way. Well, here's the thing. And I even said this to my friend Chris, who's a crazy Spider-Man fan, who I took to the press screening. I said to him, I go, if the Sam Raimi movies had never been made, this would have been awesome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just find it so hard to. I just felt that the whole first half was. I'm just like, oh, I've been through this before. I mean, it's well done. I just wasn't terribly interested because I knew everything that was going to happen. The other thing is the Gwen Stacy. Even though I like Gwen Stacy way better than MJ, it just kind of devolved into this sort of mumblecore high school romance whenever they were on screen. I'm just watching them, and I realized at one point, I'm like, they're not saying anything. They're talking. Words are coming out of their mouth. They have chemistry. They're delivering the lines well, but really nothing's happening. There's no plot being furthered. And that, I think, was Mark Webb. Mark Webb has this weird history of doing music videos and 500 Days of Summer, and it looked like he tried to do both in this movie, but right. It was... And I said this to, like I said, when I saw Savages the other night, I was talking to Nick Harum. And I said, I felt that Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, for all his foibles, up or down, it was consistent within itself. It kind of, you felt like you were going across. And even if you didn't like where it was going, it didn't feel jarring. It just kind of went through the story. This one felt like it was going from this 500 Days of Summer sort of off-kilter romance, not even a comedy, but a romance. And then suddenly... boom! Incredibly awesome music video, you know, action sequences. And it just didn't, it felt like it was going from one to the other, and there was no middle ground. and that was my, part of my problem. On top of it, the lizard storyline just seemed to be thrown in there just to, because I felt like, I'm like, okay, we're now here at this point, and all right, now we can start with the superhero story. And I right. still liked it. I thought the look of it was awesome.
Oh yes, the now I'm interested. Do you think visually it's better than Raimi's? Just visually?
Yeah. Well, part of it is you got 10 years of technology.
This is true. This is true.
I mean, I was, like I said, I was watching Spider-Man 3, and that's 5 years old, and that looks better than Spider-Man. I mean, there's a, I mean, Spider-Man 2002. I mean, you're talking about the same year like Blade 2 came out, and Blade 2 looked ridiculous, the stupid. Now, especially, so I mean, it's, you know. It's a modern movie, and 10 years from now, this Spider-Man will look dated, as right. as will anything, you know. So, yes, it looks good, but and it looks fantastic. And did you see it in 3D?
Yeah, it did. I gotta say, I did enjoy it. I was excited to see this movie in 3D. Mm-hmm. One of the few that I've been looking forward to seeing in 3D. Because every time I see a trailer, which I never got to see the trailer in 3D. I somehow missed out on that.
Oh, really?
But every time I would see the trailer, I'd be like, that looks like it's going to be really interesting in 3D. And then I saw, I was like, you know what? That was worth the extra money.
Yeah. I saw it in IMAX 3D. Well, LIMAX, but because right. it's digital. There's like, it's like 300 miles to the closest real IMAX theater. So yeah. I'm not driving that far.
Yeah, my closest one is in New York City because I have a dome. But dome IMAXs what? Are not good for this type of movie.
Oh, it's no.
good for docks.
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't want to see it in a dome. But in IMAX, and I noticed this with the Avengers, is as cool as it is to have that, you know, floor to ceiling screen. It, you know, you see the resolution problem in the blow up. I'm looking very much for, because I thought Prometheus looked great in IMAX, even though it didn't originate in IMAX. I am looking forward to The Dark Knight in IMAX just to see the IMAX footage, because there's a huge difference even in a LIMAX setting. The large format yeah. looks.
Oh, great. I remember Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
IMAX, so good.
Yeah, so I it's good. It's, I don't know if it's worth seeing in IMAX. It's definitely worth seeing in 3D. It's worth seeing. It's a good movie. I mean, I say it kind of rocks, but
I say it's actually going to be, as of now, it's the number three for me of the year.
Yeah,
right now I'm going Avengers, Prometheus, and now Spider-Man.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's gonna. I don't think it's not gonna make my top 10 list, but. It's worth seeing. I mean, because that's my thing. All my complaints are very nerdy, film nerdy, comic book nerdy complaints. So, you know, average people going to, my kids are going to see the movie and they're going to love it.
I will say also, this is probably one of the best Stan Lee cameos in recent memory.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoyed his cameo for this one.
Well, what's funny with the first two Spider-Man movies, in like the first one, he both the first and the second Spider-Man movies, Stan Lee just pulls somebody out of the way from getting killed.
Right.
Actually, in the first movie, it looks like he's like, oh, look, there's chaos. I'm going to kidnap this child and sell it into slavery. And in the second one, he's like, look, a hot chick. I'm going to kidnap and sell into slavery. And then in the third movie, he actually has a line.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, it's not bad. It's not a bad movie, but all my complaints are very dorky.
Mm.
So...
Yeah. All right.
Anywho, box office.
Okay, now we got to talk about this.
Yeah, I was way off, but...
I think everyone was.
I don't think anybody predicted this box office. You have to think, though, that the producers of G.I. Joe...
Are kicking
themselves going, what the fuck were we thinking? Let's move it out of this. It turns into be the highest grossing weekend of, like, without a giant tentpole release.
Yeah, it's just Magic Mike making $40 million blows my mind. Because I remember watching the trailers for that movie in the theater, and no one was getting it. It was in the theater, and there were plenty of women in the theater. No one was, like, hooting and hollering for that trailer.
Yeah.
And just, like, $40 million. What the...
I stand by what I said last weekend when I was talking with Ronald Nichols. Ladies... You wasted your goddamn money if all that was just to see these guys stripping. Because, like, I think I said this, if there was a movie and it was going to be strippers and it was going to have, like, Jessica Alba and, say, Emma Stone and you know, Megan Fox, not even Megan Fox, but Megan Fox in her heyday, like Megan Fox from 2007, and they were, like, all going to be topless stripping in a movie and it sucked ass, I still wouldn't go see it.
Well,
I might rent it.
There's a real world example of that. Jessica Biel did this movie, Powder Blue.
Uh-huh.
I think it was called, where she plays a stripper and then made nothing.
Yeah.
Went straight to DVD.
Yeah. I mean, just to see if that's the reason, you're wasting your goddamn money. I mean, and this is where it's the same thing with the Twilight stuff where the women go crazy over Jacob. And I called out a friend of mine who's my age, so she's 40, and a year or two ago when one of the Twilight, she's like, "Oh, Taylor Lautner." I'm like, he's under 18. She's like, "Oh, well, you guys love the, you like, you watch that Britney Spears video of Kiss Me Baby One More Time, blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, "Yeah, we watched it in shame. There's a difference. We watch it and we would be attracted because it's a fit. You can't stop. First of all, you cannot, if you're attracted to something, you can't not be attracted to it." Mm-hmm. You know, if you have some weird elbow fetish and the sight of women's elbows turn you on, you can't stop being, right. It's like, that's like telling somebody who's gay, don't be gay. Well, you can't, that's just the way you're wired. But if you are, say, so it's like,
but feel bad about it.
But yeah, if you're attracted to the, so human nature attracted to youth. And so you see a girl who's 16 years old and they sex her up and you get attracted to it. You can't not stop. You can't stop yourself from being attracted to that. But yeah, you can feel like, well, this is wrong. Women, there's no shame. There's no, they're like, "Oh, well, haha. Yeah, we get this because you guys get all that." I'm like, no, you know what? There was more depth of character in Transformers. And that was all models and tits and ass.
Yeah, and I got to say, I heard Robert Cargill say this the other day on a podcast. He says, Transformers is the Twilight for teen boys.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, like, teen boys aren't, you know, running around hooting and hollering over Megan Fox's perfectly shaped ass.
Well, first of all, the boys aren't cheering. And they're not seeing it for Megan Fox. They're seeing it for the giant fucking robots blowing things up. And Megan Fox is a plus. All the models and titties going on in that movie, that's beer commercial eye candy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one watches football for the boob commercials, but there's boob commercials in football. People watch football because they want to see the football. But at least there's an honesty to the men. They like to see the giant robots blowing things up. They're not... The fans of Transformers, who I've been critical in the past, but the fans of Transformers do not honestly wish and hope and pray that a giant robot from outer space will befriend them and then they can fight a fight to save humanity. Hmm. I mean, if it happened, it'd be cool. But they don't really honestly think that there are women going to see Twilight or Magic, and they want that fantasy. Or like the vampire, oh, I want the, they really, I seriously think that some crazy Twilight fans, they remove themselves from reality because their reality is so depressing that they really want somebody like, or like, well, he doesn't have to be a vampire, but he's got to treat me like Edward. I mean, there's guys that like, yes, I'd love you to look like Megan Fox from 2007 and just be totally into cars and shit, and that'd be awesome. Yeah. But there's no realism.
I do wonder what the success of this movie is. Steven Soderbergh's still going to be retiring? Because he was retiring, and then he came back to do this movie. This is the movie he unretired for. Yeah. And then he hasn't announced anything. Thanks, because you remember the box office on Haywire was awful.
It was terrible. And a far superior movie to Magic Mike.
I haven't seen Magic Mike, but
I'm pretty sure you're going to fucking hate Magic Mike.
Right. Even though I haven't seen Haywire, even though I haven't seen Magic Mike, I probably would say Haywire is probably a more watchable movie.
Yeah.
But although I get annoyed when there's people who do action movies and don't understand how to do an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of that, I wonder what this now massive success of Magic Mike, he's going to unretire officially and just go back to doing it. Like, maybe he's been reinvigorated.
Anybody could have directed Magic Mike. Magic Mike's success has nothing to do with Steven Soderbergh. Right. It has nothing to do. It has to do with the fact that you had like Matthew McConaughey shirtless in leather chaps and a cowboy hat.
Mm-hmm.
Just permeating the commercial. I had a conversation with a radio show host, and she's basically like, but Matthew McConaughey's a cowboy. And I'm like, really? That's your justification for spending $10 or more to see this movie? You're an idiot. So. Yeah.
Ted was no surprise. I actually expected that.
You expected $54 million from Ted?
Oh, no. Okay. I expected it to do well.
Yeah.
I expected to possibly come in at number one.
It did shit balls well. I mean, it was incredible well.
Yeah. Ted is one that I don't want to see in theater, but it's the first thing I'm watching.
Ted's funny.
Because, like, now, here's the only thing, though, with Ted is, like, everyone I hear who likes it likes Seth MacFarlane even just a little bit. Mm. Like, I did not hear anyone who, like me, really hates Seth MacFarlane's television shows and like Ted. I have not heard that defense yet.
I'd be curious. So we'll see. I'd be curious to see what you think. Because I think you can go see it. It doesn't, let's put it this way, it doesn't suffer from the really annoying, it doesn't suffer from what people who really hate MacFarlane's TV shows, it doesn't suffer from what really makes
you can
those.
It doesn't suffer from you can do anything world.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's not these, it doesn't have these weird non sequiturs that then flash into different things, and it's the same kind of humor, and it's got a lot of that same pop culture, but there's a story, it's kind of contained within itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as situational.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of containing yourself, that's another thing I like about Spider-Man. Mm. Except for the last bit, it pretty much is a standalone movie.
Yeah.
So that's something I forgot to mention, but that's another good part of it. Anyway, so what was the other one? What was
Tyler Perry's Madea's Witness Protection, which did $25 million, but that's still on the lower end of Madea movies. That was terrible, too. I went and saw that.
You were still looking forward to seeing
it,
too.
Well, I was curious because... But wow, I mean, this was bad. I mean, it was like, it wasn't even competently made. I mean, it's seriously like, I think his movies have gotten worse. Because even if you go back and watch Diary of a Mad Black Woman, which was his first Madea movie, it looked like he took some care in making it, even cinematography. This thing just looks like thrown together. And the directing, the editing is bad. I mean, I'm not even talking, forget the Madea stuff. The stuff where you got Eugene Levy and they're setting this stuff up, it the pacing's terrible. It's worth seeing as a bad example of how to edit a movie because they have these weird pauses between lines and you can tell that he's surrounded by yes men. Nobody will sit there and be like, this isn't a good idea.
Hmm.
You know, it doesn't make any logical sense in itself either. Even for Madea, I mean, it's a Madea movie, but even for a Madea movie, doesn't make logical sense whatsoever.
Did they show the Alex Cross trailer before that movie?
Yes. It looks so bad. It looks like he's taking a poop in every scene.
I want to see that movie, though.
I want to see it for the colossal mess it's going to be. Because I'm not a big Alex Cross fan, and I don't think anybody really knows who Alex Cross is outside of the people who read the book. I mean, people are aware that it was Morgan Freeman, but that was so long ago. I just think that it looks terrible. It looks like poop. I don't think Tyler Perry's a good actor at all. I mean, he can play the Madea Lord, you know, but I mean that's the extent of it.
Oh jeez. So this week's box office.
Oh, and People Like Us made just over $4 million, which is good because it was a terrible movie.
Well, that was I don't see like the hate for that movie. I'm like, you know what? It's Robert. I think it's not Orsi's. It's Kurtzman.
It's Kurtzman.
Kurtzman's directorial debut with like actors who, for the most part, are basically just doing something to fill time between their big blockbuster movies.
Yeah, but it's a shitty.
I know. Well, yeah, it's a shitty movie, but it's there. I don't really. It doesn't affect me that it's there. I don't. Really
I think they were hoping to get better counter programming. But you know what? It was funny because I actually looked at the estimates, and this was going to be the first weekend that the Avengers was not in the top 10. But when the actuals came out, the Avengers was in the top 10. And it knocked People Like Us to number 11. So like that movie,
that
needs,
thing held strong.
That thing well. That needs any more money. It's beaten Titanic's original run. I mean, has it? Yeah, it's 606 now because it was like Titanic was like just over 600,
okay.
Like 600 and change. Mm-hmm. That of course that was in 97 and no 3D, but no IMAX. Well, I think they did do an IMAX.
Well, you want impressive, then it's only $100 million away from beating Avatar.
I know it's not going to, but
it's not gonna. But that's an interesting number.
Yeah. It won't be in the it won't be in the top 10 this week.
No, I doubt. So. Definitely not, especially not with another Marvel movie now to take its place.
Yeah,
and that's the point. It's like so Spider-Man's definitely gonna win, obviously.
Yes,
like no question about that. But I think what's the more interesting question is: Are we looking at this in the 3-day spread, the 5-day spread?
It opens today. It's got a six day weekend.
Right. Do you think that it's gonna overall? Where do you think the bulk of its box office is going to be?
I don't know. I think it's going to be kind of spread evenly through the week. If you look at these kind of things, like take, for example, the Transformers movies, they all open, I think all of them, if I'm not mistaken, they all open 4th of July. But like, for example, in 2009 it gets these weird, but it doesn't have, because it's not opening on a Friday, and the Transformers movies were all like this, they have a chance of getting that one day record, but it gets spread out because 4th of July, because you literally for Spider-Man, you have opening day, 4th of July, then a Thursday, and then you have Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So there's plenty of time for people to go to the theaters. It's not going to be front loaded. It'll probably have this $150 million over the week, $100 to $150 million, but it's all going to be like 20 some million each day. That's what I would guess.
And you know everyone's going to call it a failure on day one because, like, they make $100 million. It's like, because it's fucking Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's Tuesday, and it's a lot of time, like, in town here, like, in Columbus, even though half the electricity's out, they still do, like, fireworks thing on, you know, the day before the 4th of July, and you've got people traveling. So the third is not as, like, because I think, like, the first Transformers, if you took any 3-day spread, it was kind of a weak showing, but it ended up topping as one of the top movies of the year because it had like a 5 or 6 day weekend,
right?
And I think that's what's going to happen with The Amazing Spider-Man. It's going to have a good run, but I think it's going to be just decimated when Dark Knight comes out. I think people are going to like this movie. It's going to do well, but once the Dark Knight comes, even Ice Age, which comes out the next week, I think it's got a lot of competition because Ice Age are popular movies, doing very well overseas, and then the Dark Knights are going to, and then people will just forget about Spider-Man. I mean, Avengers has had it's still making $4 million a weekend, but so.
Right. Well, so obviously Spider-Man's going to win. The real question is going to be, where is Savages going to end up? Is it going to even break the top three? Is it going to knock Ted and Magic Mike off those spots?
No, I don't think anybody cares. I think the only people who care about Savages are diehard Oliver Stone fans and film school students.
Yes.
I really don't think... And you know, I think there's a certain appeal to sort of like the Scarface crowd. You know, like the thugs. You know, like sort of like the gangbangers who like Scarface because it has that... It has the gang member aspect and it's Oliver Stone wrote Scarface. But I mean, they're not... That crowd's not going to come up. And even then, Scarface got popular on video.
Right.
For that reason, so it's not Scarface. It's not even close. I think Magic Mike's going to tumble. I think Ted's going to do well. I think Ted's going to hold well because there's nothing really. I mean, sorry, Savages would be his biggest competition.
Right.
What I find funny about the whole Ted phenomenon is when you read these things, people are like, oh, look, this movie is totally original. Ha ha, it's not a sequel reboot. I'm like, Spider-Man's coming out next week. That'll just knock that theory out. But you know, I think Ted, and they're like, oh, well, it's this original thing, and people like seeing talking bears. I'm like, man, no, they don't. It's a funny movie. Ted did well because it's fucking funny. Bottom line.
Right.
It's not some brilliant feat of marketing. It's a funny movie. So.
I'm amazed at some of the reactions I'm hearing on Ted. Like the you quoted him, so well, I'm going to re-quote him with Dave Chen's quote on Twitter. Just like... That like the most racist Asian stereotype he's ever seen in a film. Ever.
Yeah. I mean, it's very racist,
but it's evenly racist.
Well, but it's so funny. It's the thing is that scene. It's such a cartoon scene. It's so ridiculous. It's terribly racist. But it's like, how can you get? I mean, it's so racist. It's like so over the top. You're like, obviously, they aren't saying Chinese people are like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's playing off the joke, so you know.
Right.
Anyways, you ready to do the Fat Guy Five? Is there anything else you want to get off your chest?
No, not that I can think of. Although, like, I gotta say that there's a there was a lull this summer so far. I didn't. I actually look because I know you started to use Letterboxd. And I know I told you about it like a year ago. Not a year ago, but like, you know, 6 months ago.
I don't listen to you.
No, of course not. But on my Letterboxd, I looked at it the other day because I was putting in the Spider-Man live tweet. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really go to the movies the last 2 months. I went for Avengers, and then I didn't really go back until Men in Black 3. Then I kind of didn't go back until Prometheus. And then now the Spider-Man is the first time I went back to the theater since fucking Prometheus.
Well, but you watch so much TV.
This is true, but like I haven't – but like during the summer – there have been summers where I went to the movies every week, sometimes twice a week. This summer, just like I just didn't really want to go.
There's some things that require seeing in the theaters, like Avengers and Prometheus. But like, you don't need to see Snow White. That's not a good movie. You know, Rock of Ages and That's My Boy. You weren't going to go for that weekend.
No.
See, for me, I thought it's been a better summer than I expected, but it's not like the greatest summer on the planet. I'll tell you, it's okay. But what I'll tell you, something that I'm doing this summer, speaking of Letterboxd, I had like, I think I watched 48 movies in the month of May, or the month of June. And I'm on track for that as well in the month of May, or the month of July, because this weekend we're doing, because Skyfall's coming out this fall.
Right.
Since Skyfall's coming out this fall, we're with my kids, we're watching all the canon James Bond movies. We're going to watch them in order, and we're taking like an entire week. We're taking the entire run of Spider-Man's first weekend to do this.
Right.
I calculated out there are 46 hours of movies.
Oh my God.
So, and I said to my son, because I said, this is the only time we could do it, because my son was kind of getting into James Bond. I said, it's the only time we could do it because we have to do it over the 4th of July weekend. Because if we waited till like during the school year, I said, if you came home and we started the movies the second you came home on Friday and you slept 5 hours a night, we would be done just in time for you to go to school on Monday morning. So, yeah, so we're going to watch all those, and we're doing some cool stuff. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr, and I'll be saying what we're doing, and we're, like, making things. I printed out, like, I made dossiers for each movie, and I made cards that explain I gave identification cards for everybody so they can be MI6 agents and all that kind of stuff. So my kids, they're 9 and 11, they're going to love it. We're going to spend, like, all this time, and we're going to have, like, snacks for each one. And like some, like for Dr. No, we're doing like a tropical fruit cocktail. So that's sort of, you know, that's nothing special. But I'm going to have my wife's going to make me martinis. And then we're going to have like other ones. We're having like, she's making like little octopuses, like octopuses out of food for Octopussy. And
right.
I got gingerbread men with three nipples for Man with a Golden Gun. So we got some fun stuff in there. So it'll be fun. I can't wait to start that. So this is why I'm trying to get everything out of the way first.
I'm looking forward to those tweets. Yep. Sometimes you just, as a parent, knock it out of the park.
There are times where you
do these things with your kids where you're like, you're going to remember this when you're 20.
Hopefully it works. So anyway, that's one of the things. We lost power this weekend, and I'm so glad that it got back because – I don't want to fuck with the Bondathon is what we're calling it.
Right.
So let's do our Fat Guy 5.
All right.
And these are 5 great reboots, not 5 great origin stories, 5 great reboots. The first one is Star Trek, which I was really trepidatious about when I first heard it. Cause I was like, I like J.J. Abrams, but I don't like this. And I like this, but I don't like this. Kind of bounced back and forth. I thought it was a fantastic movie, so I thought it brought back the Star Trek that needed to be.
I before this, the only love for Star Trek I truly had was Voyager. I know, don't shoot me, people. Voyager is my favorite of the series, but like, you know, so but like my dad grew up with Star Trek, so he was all excited to see this. And this is, by the way, this movie is how I know that dome IMAXs suck. Because I saw this in a dome IMAX. Oh, terrible decision.
That's awful
decision. Looks really, it's all stretched down and shit. But still, it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
It just didn't look nearly as good. And then I saw it again the second time in the theater. It looks way better. But like, it was just so much fun. And I loved Chris Pine as Kirk. I loved Zachary Quinto as Spock. I thought this was also the movie that introduced me to Zoe Saldana.
Yeah.
And she was fantastic in this movie.
Yeah, she's been away for a while, so I'm waiting for her to come back because she was getting oversaturated there for a while.
Yeah, and then this movie was so great. And the marketing for this movie was great, too. It doesn't really reveal much. It really kept a lot of the big stuff secret. I mean, the only thing it doesn't keep secret, we're past the point of no return here, so.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Star Trek. the death of Vulcan. Well, you don't know what planet it is, but you know a planet gets destroyed based on the trailers.
Yeah.
And then the movie, you find out it's Vulcan. Still, but it's like just a fantastic movie, very well written. Mm-hmm. I think it was Lindelof. Lindelof, Kurtzman, Orsi, and Abrams all wrote the script together, and just great job on them to do it.
The next one on the list is the Nolanverse. This is basically the Batman Begins, Dark Knight, and we'll see what the Dark Knight Rises. Even though I'm not a fan of origin stories, at least he did the origin story justice. It didn't feel pedantic in going through the motions, and I felt it worked. And
He also did it over two movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was cool.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I don't want to berate the Nolanverse, talk too much about it, because we'll be talking about it in a couple weeks with The Dark Knight Rises. But I thought he upped the ante for superhero movies. And I think cinematic history is going to look back on this stuff and look at the 2000s, the aughts, as this incredible learning curve for superhero movies, and we're just getting started in the last year or two with what the potential can be for superhero movies, and eventually get to the point that how they do it in the comics, and which is why comics have sustained themselves for 80 years.
Right.
So, the next one is Casino Royale. Speaking of Bondathons,
I love this movie. Oh. It's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
Just like I saw again, like Star Trek. My dad, huge Bond fan, grew up with it, and I was a huge Bond fan. But like my favorite Bond is Pierce Brosnan, because it's basically the Bond you grew up with.
Yeah, it's whoever you saw first. I like Roger Moore. People shit all over Roger Moore, and I'm like, well, the first movie I ever saw was Moonraker.
Right. The first one I ever saw in the theater was Tomorrow Never Dies. No, fuck. It was
World is Not Enough.
World's Not Enough. Thank you very much, sir.
With Christmas Jones. Candy Canes.
Christmas Jones.
Candy Canes is going to be our snack for that.
Yeah. So I saw that. But then, you know, Daniel Craig, Casino Royale, blew it out of the water. And just, he does such a good job at that movie. I thought Martin Campbell really did a great job at restarting this whole thing and making it not feel like it was a Bond movie for sure, but it doesn't feel like they're trying to recapture something.
Well, and what's funny is he did GoldenEye too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, he rebooted it twice. Not rebooted it, but restarted it up, because it was like 6 years. Because License to Kill performance was so bad that it almost killed the Bond franchise. And then 6 years later, they brought in GoldenEye. And GoldenEye was going back to the gadgety, fun, pop, crazy Bond. And so he rebooted that. But then he also rebooted Casino Royale in a very Sean Connery sort of way.
Right.
So, yeah, Casino Royale is a great movie. And again, it's basically an origin story, but it's not. What I loved about Casino Royale is it was an origin story of where the icon James Bond came from. We didn't start with James Bond as a child growing up and his parent and getting orphaned and having going through and being recruited by MI6. And while that could be an interesting movie, it would feel like we're like, okay, we're an hour in, now we can start the spy movie.
Right. So. No, they the first scene is immaculate, and it's just like, here, these are what he did to become 00 agent, and then the very first scene he becomes 00 agent.
Exactly.
So perfect.
The next one, and you gave me shit because I didn't have these two on the list.
Let me clarify. Kevin sends me this list of all the five he wants to do, and I'm like, well, like, how is this movie not here? Because you raved about this movie when it came out.
Yeah.
And that is Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Which, I mean, I think everyone was so shocked at how good it was. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I'm also not a huge fan of this type of movie.
Yeah.
And I've also not been a lover of the Planet of the Apes franchise.
You're not a sci-fi fan, and most of the sci-fi that you like is action.
Right.
Yeah, you like the sci-fi action.
Right, but Rise of the Planet is a solid movie. And if we're talking about reboots, I think this was a fair thing to include on the list.
Yeah, definitely. It's a great movie, and it's a great reboot, and again, it's not a typical origin story. It tells the background. It tells a new story in a different framework. It's sort of like what X-Men First Class did, which both came out that same summer. So, right. Yeah, I love it. I think it's one of the best Planet of the Apes movies, comparable to the first. I mean, you can't say one's better than the other because the first one was made in the 60s. I mean, you know, you have to give, you know, that's like saying like, you know, this movie was so much better or not than Gone with the Wind or Citizen Kane. I'm like, well, you know, as innovative as those movies were, they were made in like, you know, 70 some years ago.
Right.
So the next one is The Incredible Hulk, which you and I, the rare time we totally agree on things.
Mm-hmm. Best of the pre-Avengers lead-up movies. Yeah. You know, no one agrees with us.
Nobody agrees. And nobody, I mean, there are people who just don't like this, but I'm like, no, it's a good movie because, and what was neat about it is it was rebooted 5 years after the other one did poorly.
The Ang Lee movie, just so bad.
But it did almost identical box office. But see, I think it was hurt by the Ang Lee movie. I don't think you can sit there and say, oh, well, because I think Ang Lee movie did better than it should have because people wanted to see a Hulk movie. Because you hadn't seen a CGI Hulk yet and all that kind of thing. So people were excited for that, and then it played soft. And it was such a shitty movie and had such shitty memories to it that when they rebooted and did The Incredible Hulk, I think some people just gave it a pass because the last movie was so shitty. So I think if they had come back reversed, I think that if The Incredible Hulk was first, that would have done way better. And then if the Ang Lee Hulk was second, it would have completely bombed.
Right.
So,
yeah, but I love The Incredible Hulk. A couple honorable mentions. We did some TV reboots as well.
Yeah. Since we do a TV podcast, and I kept thinking of reboots, because they do reboot TV shows a lot all the time. Don't worry, Charlie's Angels is not on this list.
Oh, my God.
Either for TV or movie. But Battlestar Galactica, such a fantastic series. It's dark, heavy, sci-fi, and that, dark does not necessarily mean good. But it works in this context, and it is an intense series, extremely well done, has a beginning, middle, and end. It wraps itself up, has some neat TV movies that go along with it. Excellent, excellent show. Then also Doctor Who, which is another TV movie. Even though it's not quite a reboot, they kind of restarted the franchise, it made it consistent, but they restarted it in 2005, even though Christopher Eccleston's not my favorite. I like David Tennant. I love Matt Smith. I kind of like Matt Smith and David Tennant the same. But bringing that classic sci-fi series back was a great way to reboot and get people interested in the series.
Right. I want to add Hawaii Five-O to the list, which I've seen bits and pieces of the original show. Mm-hmm. And I think that this version of Five-O makes them – it makes way more sense plot-wise, first of all, why Five-O is a thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to just being just – it's another group of cops. Like, why can't they just be regular cops in the original
show? Well, it was the 60s.
Right. Well, right. But in this one, it's like, oh, the mayor wants a group that can work kind of outside the law. It doesn't really have to – basically doesn't have to ask permission to do, like, an op or something. So I like this. I like this one a little better, although it's getting a little crazy lately. And then finally, of course, we cannot – do this list without talking about the CW's Nikita, mm-hmm. which I do a podcast for.
We do, and we're like number one in like, in what, Turkey. Afghanistan or something like that?
No, we're huge in Turkey. We're not number one, but we were really at the top of that list for a while, and now we've started to taper off, but that was after so many weeks there, and not producing an episode because there hasn't been a new episode.
But we've also been like big in Kenya and stuff
we're
like huge, that.
Yeah, Turkey, Kenya, we're in China. We got listed in China. Turkey, Kenya, China, Croatia,
pretty much like anywhere there's terrorists. Terrorists love our podcast.
Netherlands, Ireland.
Ireland. Can't tell whether it's Northern or Southern Ireland, but who knows?
Yeah, so it's like basically anywhere but like the places we kind of need to be.
Need to be the Americans. We just completely alienated our entire listening audience internationally.
Well, what's cool about this version of Nikita, it is the fourth time they've done this thing.
Yeah.
With Nikita, it's like, you know, the whole thing, because they had the Luc Besson movie, which is great. Then you had the American remake Point No Return. Then you had the La Femme Nikita TV series that was a USA show. And then you have this show. This show is the only one that's done something different, though. It's after she escapes. It all takes place after she escapes, and now she's trying to shut down the organization, which they didn't do in all the other ones. Yeah. So it's kind of it's a neat little show that if you're not watching, you should be.
And it has Maggie Q's beautiful legs and very munchable ass in it.
Nope. And it's got Lindsay Fonseca too.
It does have her munchable ass in it.
Yes, it does. Well, that's next time you have Rob Hunter on, feel free to discuss that.
Okay.
Because that's his thing.
He's into munching ass.
He is into munching.
You're missing out. If you haven't done some good ass munching,
oh my god,
you are missing out. It's. I mean, you want to brush your teeth when you're done. We better go to a break. Welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are wrapping you up in our big Spider-Man, or Savage Spider-Man episode.
You are going for those to want to brush your teeth afterwards.
That's right. Well, yeah. You want to know what that means, go listen to the middle segment. Anyways, if you want to hear, if you're listening to this on the radio and you want to hear what we had to say about Spider-Man, you can go to the middle segment and we talk about it. The short story is Meryl really loved it. I thought it was okay with reservations about it being another origin story, but still a good movie. Definitely worth checking out this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, you know, we also talked about some other things. We talked about box office and that kind of stuff. And we also gave a Fat Guy 5, a pretty fun Fat Guy 5, which was about great reboots.
Mm.
Meaning, you know, of course, being in honor of Spider-Man. But what's coming up now?
The world-famous DVD Roundup.
Whoops, that wasn't very loud, was it? I was struggling to get that going. Anyway. There we are. All right. Now,
I remember the last time I was on, I was like, the world-famous DVD Roundup.
Yeah, you like went out. You like reversed outside of puberty on that one. I'll let you do the first one. Since you have one, I have a couple.
It's going to be The Rocko's Modern Life Season 3 DVD is out today. Excellent show. I think some of it's on Netflix, too. It was a Nickelodeon show. It was MTV produced it because MTV owns Viacom and Nickelodeon. They're all part of the same company. So it was based on a comic. And then it's very a lot of double entendres. And if you watch it now, it's actually very violent. Dudes get their arm ripped off and you see bone and blood. It's... like, actually, rather sketchy for a Nickelodeon cartoon. But,
was that in the night? It was an early 90s thing?
It was the 90s. It was during the Ren and Stimpy days when you could do that stuff in a kid's show. Yeah. But, excellent, excellent show.
Cool. Season 3 is out. The ones I want to highlight, you got Barbarella on Blu-ray, which is an interesting movie. I mean, it's goofy. It's not a great movie, but it's sort of this weird snapshot of the 60s and very psychedelic. For what it is, that's out on Blu-ray, so you can get that in high definition. Another one that's out on Blu-ray is Born on the 4th of July, and I'm just pointing this out because it's this weekend. This week is the 4th of July.
Fun fact about Born on the 4th of July, it's the reason my brother's birthday is not July 4th. Because my mom saw that movie.
I'm not having to make a movie out of him. Just keep him, tie my legs together.
No, my mom saw that movie, and it freaked her out so much about having a kid born on the 4th of July. That she made sure that he was not born until midnight passed on July 5th.
What, she held him in?
Yes.
Wow.
Or something to that extent. I don't know the whole story. But
I'm impressed. Anyways, Universal's doing their 100th anniversary as a studio, so they're releasing a bunch of their classic films. Born on the 4th of July is one of them on Blu-ray, so you can catch that. Oliver Stone. It's also relevant because it's an Oliver Stone movie, and it's just terrible movie. The Savages is out this week, which might get savaged in the reviews.
Oh man!
There's also Treasure Planet on Blu-ray. This is one of my favorite Disney movies. It was completely lost and maligned and forgotten and ignored. It was actually also the reason why the studio almost didn't make Pirates of the Caribbean because they thought that the pirate theme, nobody had any interest in it. It's Treasure Island, only it takes place in space. As silly and goofy and as 80s as that sound, it's a brilliant movie. It's gorgeous looking. I had a chance to interview Ron Clements, who's one of the directors of the movie. When I was doing a junket for Princess and the Frog, because they directed that one too.
Right.
And I said to him, I go, I have to tell you, I loved Treasure Planet. And he just kind of laughed and then said very sadly, yeah, you're like the only one. It was just so depressing. I mean, this is the guy who directed The Lion King. And he's like, oh, you didn't like, nobody liked my other movie. He wasn't even like happy he found a fan. That's what was so depressing about it. It's like he was just like, well... Thanks for reminding me of that pain. Want to tell me about when my grandmother died?
So advice for me then is when I meet Neverline Taylor in person, if that ever happens, do not bring up Gamer.
Probably not. Then there's also two movies from Magnet Releasing, which is Magnolia's sort of genre arm or edgier arm. You've got The Hunter, which is Willem Dafoe, and he plays a guy who's going out trying to find the Tasmanian tiger, a thought to be extinct species in Australia and also or in Tasmania.
And also, and to play 6 degrees of movie separation, he played Norman Osborn in the original Spider-Man, which is right. Now being rebooted today.
Exactly. But yeah, that one's it's a drama, and there's more stuff happening to it, but that's the general gist of it. And there's also God Bless America, which is not necessarily patriotic. It is by Bobcat Goldthwait, directed it, and it's about a guy. It's very edgy, and it pushes the envelope on what can be offensive, because so many people just say extreme things and it becomes offensive. But it's this guy who gets fired from his job, and he is told he has a brain tumor, and he just then goes on a killing spree, starts killing people he doesn't think are nice.
Yeah.
Like, and he just starts, and that's his thing. He's like, you take up two parking spaces, obviously double park, bang, shoots a guy. I mean, and it's very, it's extreme, but it's got its weird amount of heart, but it's definitely worth seeing. And then the stinker of the week, Dimension Extreme Horror Fest Collection, which includes Hellraiser Revelations, Children of the Corn Genesis, and Zombie Diaries 2 World of the Dead. None of these can be any
basically
good.
The sequels that no one asked for.
Yeah, this is like Hellraiser 16 or
these
something
are,
like that.
You know what these are? This is the collection of those movies that are made right before they decide, let's maybe reboot this thing.
Yeah, exactly. well, we got 30 seconds. Review wrap-up. You said The Amazing Spider-Man totally rocked. Yep. I said it kind of rocked. Savages, I said totally sucked. And you're likely to agree with me. Next week, we're going to be talking about Ice Age, Continental Drift. And with that, we got about 15 seconds. Meryl, tell us how to get a hold of you.
Find me, of course, on twitter.com/sign4thing. Find my podcast I do with you, The Idiot Boxers, and my other podcast, Operation Nikita, at operationnikita.tumblr.com, and also on fatguysinthemovies.com, and facebook.com/MerylJBard.
Boom! We're done! See you guys next week.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to fatguysatthemovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The Idiot Boxers with Kevin and Meryl. Celluloid Spotlight with Meryl and Hash. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.